This podcast is brought to you by the North Star, an independent media company fully supported by our members at thenorthstar.com. We are able to speak truth to power without fear or hesitation because people just like you support this work with their monthly and annual contributions. If you're already a member, thank you. If not, join us so that we can continue our liberation journalism through podcasts, articles, activism, and so much more. Again, join us now at thenorthstar.com.
This is Ray King.
And this is Sean King.
And we are
Married to the Movement.
For this episode, we spent a lot of time so far talking about what it means to be married in the midst of this movement and the kind of specific, particular, nuanced pressures that come along with that. But for this episode, we really just wanted to talk about like just regular marriage stuff.
Right. Because it's not a celebrity marriage.
No, this is not a celebrity marriage.
Yeah, right.
First of all, like, literally, what even is a celebrity marriage? Like, I mean, first of all, I think we'd have to be celebrities first. You and I are not celebrities. I will never, ever think of ourselves as that.
But even for people who are, the biggest lesson that I could ever share with them is that even if you are a mega celebrity, your relationship takes all the regular things that every other relationship does.
Yeah.
You know, and ours is the same way.
Yeah, 100%. And I wonder if so many quote unquote celebrity marriages fail because of the pressure of the limelight, right? And always having everybody in your business. Like, I literally can't imagine. We've had people come to us, particularly a couple years ago when you first started to be really well known and wanted to put cameras in our faces and cameras in our home and, like, you
I'm
know,
glad we never
pitched
did that.
Right. Reality shows and stuff. And it was always a hard no, hard
right.
pass. For me, even when people were, you know, wanting to do a documentary style thing on you, a documentary is one thing, but I was still always like, okay, but what's that going to mean for our home?
Like, yeah, for our marriage, for the kids.
Yeah, like I just firmly believe it's not that part of your life is not meant for public consumption.
Right, because we disagree.
Mm-hmm.
We argue.
Yeah, and not always well,
right?
Like
right.
not always like, oh, honey,
not no
I really
TV.
Wish you hadn't done that. You know what I'm
no,
saying?
Hell no.
No,
it don't go like that.
No,
right.
it definitely don't go like that, right? and
right.
so you put that out there on TV, and then everybody forms their opinions about it. You should leave. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
He's trash.
Lucky
she's,
for you,
she's
it's not
that.
On TV.
Negro, lucky for you, it's not on TV. Okay,
right.
Mr. Atchaw King.
Right.
Yeah, that would not be a good look. But no, it wouldn't. It would be a good look for you. It wouldn't be a good look
no,
for me.
Really don't.
It's not a good look for anybody. And so, like, reality TV, like, it's a hard pass for me. It always has been, and good Lord,
I know we're not
always will be.
I know we weren't talking
hopefully.
About this, but so many of those folk hardly even make good money off of that trade-off, you know?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Like, the thing about being a celebrity and living your life on the stage like that is that once you start it, you pretty much always have to keep it up because then what else are you going to do?
That is true. Once you are, and I'm not knocking, I actually know some of the people on the Real Housewives show, I think they would agree with me that once you get kind of pigeonholed into being a real housewife, it's hard to go and be an executive at somebody's company.
Right, 100%. That's why, you know, they start selling, you know, teas and tummy things and all that kind of stuff because you have to do things to keep that machine going. And I never want that pressure. If we decide to live quiet lives, being professors somewhere or, you know, running a company or a nonprofit or working for somebody else's, I want to still be able to have that option. And once you become like super public, it's really difficult. I almost even wonder if we're almost there, particularly you. I think you are where you couldn't just, you know, submit a resume online to random, you know what I'm saying, company and go sit in a cubicle
Did
somewhere
you know,
and work.
One time I applied for a job for the Los Angeles Clippers. And
what?
We were living in Southern California, And, you know, the movement had already started, and people even in the room, like, they did a big group interview.
Oh, I do remember
I traveled
that.
All the way up there to Staples Center, and I was just thinking, you know, it had always been my dream to kind of work somehow in professional sports, and we were struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this was 2014, and I made it through the group interview and all of that, but they probably looked at my Twitter profile and were like, oh, hell no.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, so that ship has sailed for
right.
you. No, anyways, we're digressing. But the point is, like, once you cross over into that space where you are a mega celebrity, your relationship is all over the place, I don't know how you dial it back from
right.
that. You know what I'm saying? Like, doing this podcast, it is as, you know, out there and as vulnerable as I have ever been publicly, particularly about our marriage and our relationship.
But we're still in control in a way that having like a reality TV show, you kind of lose control.
Yeah, absolutely. And so not trying to do that, but
can you imagine what you would do if somebody tried to like splash a drink in your face or something?
It's on and popping. Are you serious right now? Yeah, like all the elegance, all the being well put together, that goes out the window. Like
yeah.
we fighting,
right?
Yeah. So no, I can't do it.
So this is, I mean, we've tried our very best to take steps to make sure that our marriage is not a celebrity marriage. Like we love each other privately and publicly. Of course, we do this podcast, but we have thwarted off. Even if you think back all the way back to when I was pastoring in Atlanta, we started getting asked to be on even some real pastor shows.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Even I'm so glad we didn't do any of
that. Me too. Like, here's the thing. Like, it's not, this is what I've realized about celebrities and celebrity relationships. It's not that their lives are any different than anybody else's.
No.
Their fights, their struggles. Like, when I have a couple podcasts that I listen to, one relationship podcast, and when I'm listening to it and I'm hearing the things that the therapist is helping them work through, I'm like, oh, wow, this is juicy, right? Like, if you had seen this on TV, like, you'd be like, what?
Right.
But when it happens in a celebrity relationship where we act like it's so abnormal and so out of the ordinary, it really isn't.
Because here's the thing. A real marriage, or whoever's listening, if you're dating, if you're married, you're in a committed relationship, whatever it is, it's hard enough without cameras in the living room.
Absolutely.
And so I think what those cameras do is just magnify the problem times 10.
And then it puts you under the pressure to have to respond in a particular way.
Everybody knows your business.
Yeah,
right?
And it's hard to come back from. So, yeah, this is definitely not a celebrity marriage. This is a regular marriage that takes all the maintenance that every other marriage takes.
And we've had all the highs, all the lows, all the ups and downs, you know, and we've been together. We had to just kind of do the math there for a minute. We've been together for 23 years.
Yeah, and through 23 years from the age of 15 to now, I'm 38 years old. You're 40. All the change and the growth that happens during that time.
You just said that because you like, you just like to let everybody know that you're 2 years younger than me.
No. Listen, I am proud of my age, okay? Like, I'm not one of those people who laments over getting older. Yes, I lament over the aches and pains and, you know, the loss of youth and what that means for certain things physically. But no, listen, every year is a blessing. So I don't mind being 38.
Right, right.
I'm excited to be 40, right. actually. Yeah,
no,
I feel like it's taking forever to get here.
I'm not worried about it or feeling some kind of way either, but I
like your grays.
What grays? What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. You got all the grays. I think it's cute.
Yeah. I mean, I might be half gray in a few years at least. You never know. But, you know, thinking back over how many years we've been together, I think leads me to maybe one of the favorite lessons that I'd like to share with the audience. It's this idea, and once we learned it, you could probably unpack it even better than I can. It's this idea that when you are with one person for a very long time, particularly if you're married to one person for a very long time, It's like multiple marriages.
Oh, yeah. We read this in an article, and I forget where the article came from, but...
It was a New York Times article, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And this woman was talking about, you know, just this realization that she had come to, that you have several marriages, even within one marriage. And, you know, the most successful marriages are the ones that are able to make the transition from one set of rules or one way of being or one circumstance to another, because they each change you, they change your partner, they change what you need from your partner. And if you can't make that transition, you're going to have a really difficult time staying married over the long
right.
haul.
I mean, because when I think about just hearing it out loud that I've been with you since you were 15, well, any 30-year-old is not the same person as the 15-year-old.
Hopefully not.
Right. I mean, you had the same Social Security number and those type, but you fundamentally have had life experiences between 15 and 30 that change you. You've had loss. You've had growth. You may have earned degrees. You've been hired and fired.
Mm-hmm.
And what it took for me to be in a committed relationship, a healthy relationship with you as a 15-year-old is damn sure not what it took when you were 30 or when you're 38.
And
you
what
know?
I wanted for my life at
right.
15 or what I wanted for my life at 20, very, very different than what I want from my life at 40 years old, almost 40 years old. What I require of you at 15 and 20 and what I was willing to accept and the role that I needed you to play in my life and in our family, it's very different. And there have been times where we've really struggled to make those transitions. I'm thinking particularly about when we transitioned from being, when I transitioned from being a stay-at-home mom, which I did for about 6 years, to going back into the workplace and what that meant for what I needed from you, the role that I now needed you to play in the house. Whereas when I was a stay-at-home mom, everything concerning the kids was under my purview. Their education, their doctor's appointments, their extracurricular activities, their grooming, all of that. And it's not to say that that's completely changed. It hasn't. That is the, you know, the burden of being a woman oftentimes, you know, in this country or in society. But when I made that shift, it took you a really long time.
Too long.
Yeah.
To
okay,
really
yes.
understand
100%.
It. 100%. No, but I think that's the power of that lesson, that you have to understand that when you're with somebody for decades, that what it required of you in one decade is different than what it required of you. And sometimes I think of it almost as like shifting gears in a car.
Mm.
It's like sometimes I was slow to understand I needed to shift the gear.
Yeah.
And that
it was a need and that I was a fundamentally different person. You know what I'm saying? Like it is different to be completely devoted to my family and everything concerning you all. Like it was all that my time needed to do. So think about how to make your life special, how to make vacations great, you know, all that kind of stuff. Then I go back to work and my mind is other places, right? I have other things to be concerned about, have other pressures, other stressors, and I needed you to carry some of that burden. And it changed who I was, right? Like all of a sudden I was like, oh, I can do this thing and I have this ability and this strength. And not only am I exercising it at work, but now I'm exercising it at home.
Right.
And I just, I became a different person and had different things that I needed from you and things that I didn't need from you. I no longer needed you to earn all the money. Now, I needed you to earn most of it still.
But no, you were a contributor in that way. And like, I think the deal that I made, and I'm even thinking of it in my mind right now, I'm not necessarily proud that I thought this way, but I think I thought when you were a stay-at-home mom, since I was earning all the income, that allowed me to check out in some other ways because my responsibility was to earn all the income. Now, all of a sudden, you're working out of the house and earning income. I can't be practicing in the same way. Can't be doing it in the same way.
As we near 5 months of quarantine, Sean and I are running out of things to do to keep the kids occupied. We usually love to get active as a family, going on bike rides or swimming at pools, but social distancing has made that hard.
That's why Bulldog Online is so great. Bulldog is a streaming app that offers a range of yoga workouts from beginning to advanced, accompanied by the best music playlists to keep you motivated while you move.
They have cardio-infused classes for when I want to work up a sweat, and more traditional, easy-to-follow classes that are great for us to do as a family. Plus, their app makes streaming super convenient.
We always try to work with companies that take a stance on issues of social justice, and Bulldog has done just that, with their company's director having raised thousands of dollars for bail funds for protesters against police brutality and white supremacy.
Right now, Bulldog Online is offering a free trial for the first month. Then you can use our custom promo code KING50, no spaces, to get 50% off your second month.
Just check them out at bulldogonline.com. And that promo code again is KING50, KING50, no spaces. Check them out and let us know what you think.
Married to the movement. Another time I think of when we've had like fundamental shifts in who we were, I think about, you know, the last 5 or 6 years or so of being in this movement and how it has fundamentally changed you and changed then who I needed to be for you and the level of support and understanding and grace and space and all those things that you needed from me. I feel like a lot of couples get stuck on this idea of, well, you used to be this way. You used to like this. You used to do that. You used to enjoy this or hate that. And
you're not who you used to be.
You're not who you used to be. Right. And people are like, oh, you've changed. And it's like, of course, right? Yeah. Of course you've changed. Of course I have changed. And what we have to do is, like, have we grown together? And are you fundamentally, like, do we still have the same values? You know what I'm saying? And I think that's one thing. Through all the shifts and all the iterations of ourselves and who we've become, I think that we've still maintained the same core values.
I think so. I think the question for me is, can you be committed enough through periods where you're not even sure if you do share the same core values? Mm. Like, can you be committed enough until those things can align again?
Mm.
And, like, there have been times where, like, my role as an activist and as an organizer is, I it's not something that, I'm trying to say this the right way, and you can correct me. Like, it's not your favorite thing, right?
It, what,
like,
about you or that you've done or about the
or
world?
Or it's not something you would do yourself.
No, absolutely not.
And it's not necessarily who you would want me to be if you could have your way.
I mean, what I appreciate about you is, I appreciate that you have always been drawn to really stand up for people and to, you know, be an advocate. And actually, so when I talk about core values, that's what I mean. Like, so no, I would never choose this public life for you or for myself.
Or for the family.
Or anything like that.
That's
what
I mean.
But in my private life, in my workspaces, I have always been an advocate, you know, for children, especially as an educator, for my colleagues when I felt like there were things that they needed that they weren't getting. And so in that way, we share that ethic, that core ethic of advocating for people and using our voice and even putting ourselves in the line of fire and taking the hits when it's going to benefit others. And so that's what I mean. No, I wouldn't choose the public life. No, I would not choose, you know, to be married to someone who's an activist. I would not have chosen that life, but I did choose someone who shares my core ethic of being a strong advocate for others.
And standing up for people.
Exactly.
Right.
And so that's what keeps us bound. I think that a time where we were misaligned, you know, on our core values is, you know, after you were pastoring the church in Atlanta and that closed down after a few years, like, you really struggled to find your way with God and religion. And it was really difficult because I grew up in church, like grew up in church.
Right.
And it meant so much to me. And so when we got together and we talked about this in the first couple episodes, I thought I was marrying a pastor.
Right.
You know, and we would literally take our Bibles with us on our dates, you know, when we were teenagers and like even read scripture.
Even when I was a student, when I first started, when I went to Morehouse my senior year to visit campus, like when I walked around campus, I like would carry my Bible around with me.
Oh, wow.
Like,
yeah, that's a lot.
I mean, just like, you know, a young Christian and like you think that's what a young Christian is supposed to do.
Right. And so like that was something that was a core value that we shared. And then when you stopped pastoring and looking back on it now, I definitely think you went through like a good 6 months to a year of depression. We didn't name it that then, and I didn't recognize it as that then, but or a grieving period for sure after having poured your heart and soul so much into this thing. And the kids and I, we were still very much invested in church. You know, we moved out to Southern California. We joined Saddleback. We were super involved. You weren't. You would come to church with us, you know.
Y'all basically had to drag me out to the church.
Yeah, we did, you know, but we were doing Bible studies and singing. What'd you say?
It was conservative.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, maybe.
They had what's the redneck? What's the man's name?
Phil Robertson.
What's
from
that show?
Duck Dynasty.
If you have a member of the Duck Dynasty cast speak at your church, it might be conservative.
Okay.
I checked out.
Yeah, okay. But also, this was pre-Trump. So things weren't like so crazy divided like they are now.
Not in the way that we know it now. But
no, I might struggle to go to Saddleback today. I don't know.
Well, they have beautiful ministry for children and other things that you all love.
Yeah. And we were super involved and you couldn't get there. And that was really, really difficult. Like that was a major shift from who you used to be, and now all of a sudden you are this guy that could care less about church. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And that was a moment where I had to stick it out until we could become aligned again. And we still struggle with church. I think we're both kind of more like in that place, but you are definitely, I wouldn't call you jaded, you know, about it.
No, I don't feel jaded about it either, but I think we're just on a complicated journey, and I get that. I get emails and messages from so many of the listeners of The Breakdown who tell me that they struggle in this modern context, particularly listeners who are current or former practicing Christians struggle in the era of Trump to figure out how to balance their faith out with politics and everything else.
And that's what did it for me, for sure. Like when Trump got elected and I saw the way evangelicals have just gone so hard for him in ways that have just completely blown my mind. Like the hypocrisy is right there in my face. And that's when I started to also struggle. And so I think we're in a similar place.
Right now,
but when we weren't, when I was still very much, you know, sold out to Christianity.
Now we're just lost together.
No, now you've led me astray. You made me backslide.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are periods of any marriage where, you know, one person is kind of on one plane and somebody else is on another, and you have to be committed enough until you finally are overlapping again and find your way back through. You know, just that idea, though, that in one marriage, it has multiple expressions, almost like it's multiple marriages.
Almost like it's multiple marriages, right? And when we read that together, it was like a light bulb moment, right? And I think that it helped us to realize that it's okay to change and it's okay that we have changed. And as much as we can communicate, as much as we can be self-aware about those changes and communicate about them with each other and how our needs and things have shifted, you know, I think it'll help us to continue to weather, you know, all the changes and all the ways in which life can throw things at you that completely change who you are.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, another huge lesson, and I think we've had success and struggles with it, but I've never forgotten it, is we read a book as a couple, and we read it in a couple different environments, actually, called Five Love Languages. And
you know, he was just, I forget the author's name of that book, but he was just on Oprah on Super Soul Sunday. Like, she was like, people have been recommending this book to her for years, and she kept seeing it on the New York Times.
Gary Chapman,
yeah, on the New York Times bestseller list. But she's just now really having a conversation about it, which is wild to me. This book has been around for forever.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
but he was on there and was talking about it, and it's one of those things that we learned early on in our marriage, and I never forgot it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I would recommend the book to any couple. It's the lessons in there, I never forgot them. And I think the one big lesson that is kind of the overarching lesson of the book is something that I understand in theory, but do still struggle to practice it.
Oh, 100%.
That's why the book exists. The idea is that with love, we often give love to people in the way that we like to be loved.
Yeah.
And the way that we like to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
But that other people need a type of love that they prefer.
Yeah.
That works for them.
And it's so funny to me the way God works and the way opposites often attract, because we could not be more different in how we feel love. There are five love languages. Giving gifts, receiving gifts is a love language. Acts of service. And so, like, if you feel loved when people do things for you.
Right.
It was words of affirmation was another one. What are the last two?
It's words of affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
Acts of service.
Uh-huh.
Receiving gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Quality time,
yeah.
And physical touch.
Oh, that's right, and physical touch. And so I think yours was definitely words of affirmation.
Uh-huh.
No surprise there.
Well, what do you mean by that? Well, I sense a diss there. What is that supposed to mean?
It's just, you know.
That didn't seem like an affirmation. It's supposed to be words of affirmation, and you had like a little dig right there.
No, I'm just saying, you enjoy a compliment. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and compliments are hard for me. They're hard for me to give. I'm just like, you know, you're good. Fine. Go be good. You know,
right.
Do what you're supposed to do. Why you need all this praise and need to be pumped up for it. Like,
but see, here's the thing. This illustrates the lesson thoroughly because while words of affirmation are a love language for me, or a way that I like to, you know, I feel love.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how you like to give it.
Oh, no.
But
not
we
at
have
all.
We have to put ourselves in a position where we give love in the way that our partner needs it.
No, Gary Chapman on Super Soul Sunday was literally telling people, like, you're going to have to practice it. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, listen and notice when you hear other people say nice things about other folks and be like, oh, okay, that was a compliment that so-and-so just gave. Let me practice in the mirror giving Sean this word of affirmation. Now, listen, it's not that serious. Like, I don't have such a big problem with it that I have to practice in front of a mirror, but I do have to, like, make a mental
remind
note.
Yourself.
I do.
Right.
And so, like, when I was listening to The Breakdown, your podcast, when I was listening to it the other day.
You forced yourself to say something nice to me about it.
Well, okay, so I thought something nice about it. Like, that was easy. But then taking the extra step to take out my phone and text you, like, hey, I really like this point that you made about Kamala Harris in this, or hey, I thought this was really good. I have to force myself to do that because I'll think it, or I noticed you sitting there looking all cute in your shirt, right? And I was just like, hey, instead of thinking it, I'm going to tell him he looks cute in that shirt.
Right. Well, because I think words of affirmation, and this is a generalization, but I think men need words of affirmation.
Right.
Just in general.
That's really what I meant when I said big, no surprise there.
I
think a lot of men love to be told just how wonderful they are.
And here's the thing. Like, for most men, words of affirmation from their partner or wife are going to always mean more than whatever they see on social media or whatever.
And that was,
you know,
a lesson that took me a while to understand. I think for a while, the reason I wasn't so big on words of affirmation is because I felt like you got it from so many different places. People are always inviting you and giving you awards and coming up to you in public and saying really some of the most ridiculous things.
The truth comes out. That's how you really feel about me.
Just be like, really? Oh my gosh. I just be like, he tweets. He tweets for a living. What are we doing right now?
I do a lot more than tweet.
Now you do. Fine. But a few years ago, I'm like, really? Like, sis, keep your drawers on. It's not that serious.
What are you talking about?
Then, but now what I understand is, fine, you can get those words of affirmation and people all up in your comments saying all these, you know, really lofty things about you, some of which are true, but that it doesn't mean as much to you as when I, who is super critical, you know, says to you, hey, you know what? I'm really proud of you. Man, you really did something there with that Rodney Reed case, and I'm super proud. Like, that just means everything to you to hear that from me, and I didn't understand that. I didn't think you needed it because you got it so much.
Well, see, I think the point there is, and we're using you as an illustration here, I have the same problem.
Yeah, you do.
For me, it is easy for me to give words of affirmation.
True.
And because it's my love language.
You might text me that you love me a million times a day. You say, oh, you look so pretty. Man, you're so fine. And it literally just, it doesn't mean a lot to me to hear you say that.
I did notice, though, that if I go a day without saying it, you're like, what, you're not feeling me? Or you're not loving me no more?
I know. It's so crazy.
You said it didn't matter. Then I get real busy one day and you'd be like, hey, what's wrong with your phone?
I know. I do get used to it, I guess. But, like, if you're saying those things, but you're not doing the other things, the things that actually feel like love to me, then your words of affirmation ring hollow. You know, I feel like it's a cop-out. Like, it's easy for you to say those things.
Earlier in our marriage, I think acts of service was your top love language.
For sure it was.
And I don't know that it is so much anymore. It could be receiving gifts or quality
time, which is so wild to me. And this goes back to that idea of having several marriages, you know, within the same long marriage. To your point, yeah, acts of service was everything to me many, many years ago. And if you did something and I didn't have to ask you to do it, it still does mean a lot to me. Like our baby, Savannah, our 10-year-old, they're actually at a dance recital, preparing for their dance recital right now, which we'll be heading to in a couple of hours. But her little sister, our 7-year-old Zaya, had twists in her hair, and I needed to get those twists out so that her hair could be put up in a bun. And I've just been so busy, I really wasn't even thinking about it. So I woke up this morning and Zaya comes upstairs and her hair is done. Like, it's done. It's in a bun. And I was like, wait a minute. Who did your hair? And she was like, Savannah. I was like, Savannah did it? She's like, yeah, she took my hair out last night. Where were we? Oh, we were at a Christmas party. She's like, she took my hair out last night and she had fully done her hair. And I was blown away.
Taking it out of the twist.
Put leave-in conditioner in it. And I was just like, nobody asked her to do that. She saw something that needed to be done. And damn it, she went and did it. Like, she earned so many points with me for stuff like that. Our 20-year-old, Tay, she's so good at acts of service. When somebody does things like that, just because they know it will help me or that it'll mean something to me. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. So maybe acts of service still is.
Oh, they still matter. Yeah, I think they still resonate with you. I think the thing is, I have always had to tell myself that while words of affirmation mean so much to me, and it's not that you just completely don't care about them, but they don't mean nearly as much to you, that I have to love you in the way that you need to be loved with your love language and vice versa. And
you're still working on it.
I know. Yeah. I know. You are too.
I don't know. I think I'm pretty good at it.
You would.
Oh,
I'm just saying, yeah, you're okay at it. Yeah,
what?
You're all right.
Are you serious right now?
Yeah, you're all right.
Boy, bye. I give you so many words of affirmation. Whatever.
You're struggling to think of them, right? I can see you.
No, that's not true. I literally just told you about your podcast.
Yeah,
that it was good.
Yeah,
I told you look good in your shirt. That was just a few minutes ago.
That was the first things you said in a long time.
That is so not true. I told you you look sexy with your gray hair.
When did you say that?
While we was laying in bed the other day.
What? Hold on.
Yeah.
We need to warn people to turn this podcast off if the kids are in the room.
Whatever.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, I think the thing is, of the five love languages, all five are good.
Mm-hmm.
And there's value in all five. It's the lesson there is about being unselfish and being
decentering yourself.
Yeah. You just have to realize that how other people perceive and receive love is very likely going to be different than you.
And another really key thing that's in that book that I never forgot is this idea of your love tank and paying attention to whether or not it is empty or full.
Why don't you explain it just for a second?
Yeah, and so if you think about, like, the gas gauge in a car and how it has that, you know, the indicator that shows you how full the tank is, Gary Chapman says you can think of your love life in that same way. And you really have to pay attention to whether or not your own personal love tank is empty or full or somewhere in between there. And the same with your partner, thinking about your partner's love tank and asking yourself, what have I done lately? What have I done recently to make a deposit to fill up my partner's love tank? And if you can't think of anything, then your partner's love tank is probably running on close to E. And I've had to have times where I communicated that to Sean, like, you know what? I'm feeling a certain way. Like, you're really, really busy. You're getting a little aloof right now. I'm you know, we're not having date nights.
Right.
I'm struggling to feel loved by you right now. And my love tank is like, it's on E.
And all of these illustrations are just to make deeper points about the complexities of a marriage. And what we have found with that illustration is that the most dangerous point in a marriage is when, or in any relationship, is when both people are on E.
Yeah, for sure.
That when both people are not feeling loved and aren't feeling it in practical ways or in deep ways, they're just not feeling it. And it's not like, I'm not talking about a bad day. We're talking about for a sustained period of time when both of us, and we've had those moments.
Yeah, for sure.
Every couple will. And if you're a couple and you haven't, you will eventually. Like, we've gone through really hard times in life where we've had grief and death and loss and loss of friends, loss of loved ones and sickness.
Jobs and income and all
of
that stuff.
And all of those things sometimes can wear both people down at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have found, generally speaking, is that if both of us are on E, if our love tanks are on E at the same time, that's a dangerous place.
Yeah.
And, you know, to find your way out of that, I think probably takes this last thing that we'll close out talking about. And it's almost a cliche because you hear it all the time, but maybe we can just give some substance to it. It's really unconditional love.
Oh, yeah. You know, I love Red Table Talk with Jada Pinkett Smith and her mom and daughter.
It's brilliant, actually.
Yeah, and I heard her talking about this idea of unconditional love. And once she and Will Smith decided that that's what they were going to give to each other, like, it made it an easier jumping off point to work through the other things. And it's like, to your point, it sounds really cliche, but I realized in listening to her talk about that I had not made that decision about you and that I probably hadn't made that decision about anybody in my life, really.
When did you make it? Like, last week? Because you just saw that Red Table episode. I'm thinking, I'm like, oh,
No. Well,
it couldn't have been that long ago because this show hasn't been out that long.
No, hush. No, I don't know when it was. Like, no, it was like some months or a year.
No, I'm clowning, but it's true that we hear the word and the words unconditional love thrown around all the time.
Yeah, but most of us have conditions, right? Like, I certainly have conditions around my relationship with pretty much everybody. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I could say not with my kids, although that's probably not communicated to them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'd be like, listen, I will disown you if, you know, A, B, or C. I won't. But, yeah, on this idea of unconditional love, it's difficult for me. And, you know, I'm not going to psychoanalyze myself and talk about, you know, childhood traumas or whatever. But I have lived a life that has made me have to be able to receive people and let people go with an open hand. Mm. And I think that it's something that that I do really well, but it probably comes from a place of trauma. Mm. And that means that everybody is conditional for me. And I had to really, when I heard Jada Pinkett talk about that, I had to say, what would it look like for me to love this man unconditionally, not like, because I always kept in my back pocket, if you ever do this, if he ever cheats on me, you know what I'm saying? If he ever does A, B, or C, I am out. And I'm not saying, I think that there are times, particularly if you're in an abusive relationship.
Yeah, unconditional love, let's set some parameters. Unconditional love does not mean accepting abuse.
Right.
And let's even, you know, affairs can sometimes be a form of abuse in that sense. We're not talking about that. We're talking about accepting the person for who they are.
Yes, absolutely.
And I will say, as a parent, it is so easy for me to accept our kids for who they are. Like,
yeah, that's true. You are very, very accepting of our children, flaws and all.
Well, I think I am that way in general, even in our relationship. And I'm that way. I tend to just accept people the way they are. It's like, it's something I try to practice. But
I would say that's true about you.
Yeah, it's much harder to do in the context of a romantic, committed relationship.
Well, what she helped me to realize was that I was always kind of wishing you were different somehow.
Uh-huh.
You know, I wished you were more romantic, or I wished you didn't do this, or you did more of that, or why couldn't you just be like this? And I was stuck in that place in my mind a lot. And I didn't realize it. It was an unconscious, you know, way of being in our relationship that I was constantly looking for more or something else from you instead of just looking at the person who was in front of me and accepting that, you know, this is who you are. This is probably who you're always going to be. And, like, that's okay. You know, like, even your flaws, like, I have to know it and I have to, you know, love you through it and not keep something in my pocket that if you don't change or if this doesn't change about you, then that gives me an out to no longer love you.
It's not loving someone unconditionally is not about, you know, having a low standard. It's not about...
No, because, like, even the things about you that I do feel are a problem, like, I still hold you to it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I'm still like, no, I actually need you to show up differently, you know, in this way. So it's not about lowering my standard, but it's not a deal breaker.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I don't think less of you.
Yeah, it's not about not wanting growth. Like, yeah, no, you're in a relationship. It's okay to still want growth, but the presence or absence of that growth should not determine your love for that person.
Exactly. That's what it's about. And I think that for so long, I was allowing it to. You know what I'm saying? And to hear her talk about, and it was a relief, honestly. It was like a burden lifted once I made that decision that I'm going to love you unconditionally. I could give up control of trying to change you. You know what I'm saying? I could give up control of trying to hope that you'd be any different than you already are. Because people don't change for the most part. Like, I don't know. It's
hard
to... You
mean like a fundamental shift.
Like a fundamental shift. You know what I'm saying? And once I gave up that the control of that or the need of that, I could just love you. Like, I could literally just love you. You know what I'm saying? And not be so concerned about trying to change you. Because I can honestly say, to your point... You don't do that with me. You know what I'm saying? I've always felt like you loved me unconditionally.
I'm just that kind of guy.
Okay, wow. It is one of your gifts, though. It's one of your strengths.
No, but here's the thing, to bring it full circle. You know, like, gosh, over the past 23 years, you have asked for 23 years for me to be more consistently romantic. And I have struggled in fits and spurts to express it in any kind of meaningful way.
Yeah.
And part of accepting is not that, like, that it no longer matters to you, but your love for me is not determined by my level of romance.
Right. Like, if you never turn into, like, a Rico Suave kind of guy.
Yeah, whatever that is.
Right,
exactly.
Whatever that is. I don't know. It sounded right. If you never turn into that guy, can we still be happy? Can I still, you know, be good in this marriage?
Right.
And if I love you unconditionally, then the answer to that is yes. And to that point, I actually, one of my girlfriends shared something on social media that really resonated with me. And it was this woman talking about, you know, how she had wanted her husband to be all romantic and wished that he had, you know, shown up to her job with flowers unannounced or booked a trip, you know, without her knowing and taking care of every little detail. Like, that kind of stuff just sounds amazing to me, right? I mean, it just does. I'm like, aw. But she said, like, her husband was never going to be that. And she had to accept that. But then when she looked at her husband and looked at all of the ways that he did demonstrate care for her, she realized, like, oh, I am no less loved than this woman whose husband is doing all these, you know, big shows. Mm-hmm. It's just he does it by making sure that he allows me to get in the car first and he always returns the grocery cart.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Or whatever it was. And I started thinking, I was like, you know what? That's Sean. Like, I am never with you and I'm carrying something heavy that you don't take from me. You know, like, as broken as your body is, as in pain as you are so often, you are always going to carry the heavy thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You're always going to make sure I'm comfortable.
What else?
Oh, shut up. See, now I'm done.
Come on, what else?
No,
what
see,
else?
I was going to name a few more things, but now I'm done. Yeah. But no, honestly, I did. I thought about it, and I considered all of the ways in which you show care for me that are not these big gestures, but that let me know that I am loved.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think when we get to the point where we say, I have a deep, unconditional love for this person, it then allows us to kind of weather some of the other disappointments.
That is so very true.
And marriage is in some ways, and I've learned this, marriage is a mirror that shows you yourself.
Yeah.
In some ways shows you what your strengths and weaknesses are, and shows you, you know, how much patience do you really have with somebody. And I've learned as much about myself because you're in such a close proximity to this other person all the time, that if I had spent these past 23 years alone, There's so much less I would know about myself as a result.
Yeah, because there's been a lot less required of you, right? I mean,
I tell everybody, if I have been single for these 23 years, I would be a bum.
Oh, like, you would definitely be a bum.
I would definitely be a slob. I don't even.
It wouldn't be good.
I don't know if I'd still be here.
Oh, Lord.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
well, we're together.
Yeah.
We're married, and we're making it.
It is true, though, that so many men in particular pass away, including when your grandmother, Nana, passed away.
Yeah.
Papa didn't make it much longer.
No, he didn't, which is so interesting because, like, they had one of those old school marriages where they were, like, still married, but they weren't even living in the same house, you know? Like, for a very long time, he still came over and ate dinner every now and then. She still did his taxes, you know, but they just never felt the need to get divorced.
But he loved her, though.
Oh, yeah, loved her a lot. And then they did spend the last couple years in the same house together so that my aunt could take care of them. But, yeah, it says a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I've enjoyed doing this podcast with you.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been insightful, and in some ways, my hope is that people could see our humanity, understand us, get to know us, but that we would also just get to share stories that would be insightful for people too.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, help them in their own journey. Like, here's the thing. Sean and I are married to a very particular movement. You know, we're married to each other, obviously, but we're also married to this movement for social justice and Black lives. And but we are all married to movements. A lot of us, you know, I have some friends who whose husbands are like huge, you know, in youth sports, and it defines their lives. It defines their weekends. It defines how they're spending their evenings throughout the week. And it comes with its own set of challenges, you know, when parents aren't happy with you or things aren't going well and all this kind of stuff. We are all married to movements. We have friends who are married to music, you know what I'm saying, and to the life of an artist and all of that kind of stuff. And so how do you maintain a healthy marriage and a commitment to each other in the midst of all these other movements and things that we're a part of? Sean and I just happen to be married to a very particular movement, but, you know, we all have are facing our own challenges. And so hopefully this podcast has been interesting, and hopefully this particular episode, you leave with some tools and things that will be useful to you.
All right.
Right.
It's a wrap.
Yep. Love you.
All right. Take care, everybody. Love you.
Married to the Movement is brought to you by the North Star. We're so grateful to our members who make this and all the North Star content possible. Members of the North Star will always have access to this content first. So if you're not a member, you can head over to thenorthstar.com, click Join Now, and access this podcast, as well as a daily column from Sean King, show notes from The Breakdown, and other news for as little as $5 monthly. We super appreciate your support. Shout out to our senior producer, Willis, our podcasting director, Lysandra, and our creative director, Tone, for their work on today's episode. New episode live next week.